This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Back to the Middle by Deer Hunter, right here on BFM 89.9. It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. And this evening, we're going to be talking about corruption. Now, for years, it's been something that we've been fighting. But has anything changed? And what is the government's plan to end this vicious cycle? Here in the studio to tell us more about the latest developments on the fight against corruption are Ravindran Devagunam, Director of NKRA Fighting Corruption, as well as Wan Saiful Wanjan, Chief Executive of IDEAS, which is the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs.
Welcome. Very nice to have you with us this evening. You know what? We would like to focus a little bit on the EG report, of course, with the reports all coming out yesterday and the fact that it's being tabled three times a year. It must be like Christmas has come early for you. Three times a year, no less. Ravi.
First of all, thanks for having me, guys. Yes, it's kind of like having Christmas come three times a year. We're trying to get it to be more effective by having more public forums. Mm-hmm. We had one yesterday where we had, for the first time in history, we actually had the civil service headed by the chief secretary himself and the major KSUs facing the media and answering questions on the current Attorney General or Auditor General's report. Now, you've got to commend the civil service for doing something like this. It's the first time. Change is never easy. But I think they did a very credible job and would like to keep the momentum going, right?
And we'll talk more about the AG report after this. But of course, when we're talking about eliminating corruption and providing good stewardship for our resources, the success of the country's economic and social development is so much directly dependent on us combating that. How far away are we from achieving this particular goal and eliminating corruption, at least with regards to some of the initiatives in GTP1 and GTP2?
Well, comparing GTP1 and GTP2, we keep pushing our various initiatives. Some have been easier, some have been much, much more difficult. And corruption is not one of those things that you can say we're going to eliminate it. We hope to reduce it. We hope to get the citizens or the rakyat to feel that it is actually reducing. If you look at broader figures like our GDP, it's been strong. Our gross national income per capita has been growing at 6.3% year on year since 2009. We've had some of the highest foreign direct investment as well as domestic direct investment, realized projects. So from that standpoint, there is some level of confidence in Malaysia, right? And this is depicted in, for example, today we just received another ranking, which was done by the Economist, the Economist Intelligence Unit. They've actually ranked the business environment survey ranking, and Malaysia has gone up from 24 to 19, right? It's second best in Asia.
A significant jump as well.
It's a significant jump, right? In addition, you know, if you look at World Bank's ease of doing business, we have been successively going up in the rankings, right? And we've, from 2013 to 2014, we've gone up two ranks from 8 to number 6. And to this time, we are actually ahead of UK, Norway, and Australia, right? And if you look at IMD competitiveness report, we've actually improved from 15th rank to 12th rank.
Yeah, so you're saying focus on the bigger picture and look at things like that. But these are big reports. They're very, very big numbers.
Sure.
And a little bit difficult for the man on the street, the layperson, to perhaps comprehend, take in, and then form the perception, you know, that's favourable. What's your opinion? From your vantage point, how can the layperson better appreciate these rankings or ratings?
It's not that easy, I think, for the layperson to actually decipher all these different messages that's coming in. And if you really look at it, the data that Ravi presented just now, mentioned just now, shows that we're not doing that badly, actually. But when you ask people, they will feel that, they will tell you that they feel that corruption is really rampant in the country.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a gap between public perception and what's actually happening when you do a real life study and in more in-depth study, not just dependent on perception. So I think it's really not an easy thing for us to judge whether the country is really that corrupt or not. Perception by itself cannot be the one and only measure that we use. There must be other measures as well.
Folks, we're speaking about corruption. With us in the studio is Ravindran Devagunam, Director of NKRA Fighting Corruption, as well as Wan Saifulwan Jan, Chief Executive of IDEAS. This show is brought to you by the Government Transformation Program. We'll be right back after some quick messages from our sponsors right here on BFM 89.9.
Bickering frustrates Malaysians. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. And this evening, we're speaking about corruption. With us is Ravindran Devagunam, Director of NKRA Fighting Corruption, as well as Wan Saifulwan Jan, Chief Executive of IDEAS, Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs.
Now, from the rankings that Ravi listed a little earlier, Wan Saifulwan, you were talking about the gap between perception and the reality of the situation, which largely echoes what you said. In the IDEAS Interim Anti-Corruption Initiatives in Malaysia report, you said that it was important for the public not to be influenced by perception alone when discussing corruption in Malaysia. Although the CPI implies that corruption level in the country is bad, your data suggests that the situation is not as bleak as the CPI score. So can you tell us what exactly that statement was based on and perhaps how your methodology differed from that of the CPI?
Yeah, the publication you referred to is now available in book form. Actually, we published that as a book. Okay. It should be available in bookshops. What we did was we reviewed the anti-corruption initiatives taken by the government right from 1955, I think, if I remember correctly. So we reviewed everything that has been done. We documented them into one book. Mm-hmm. And then we also looked at things that Ravi mentioned just now, all these international indicators, the amount of FDIs coming in. There are certain assumptions. If you look at international trend, what you will see is really corrupt countries do not attract foreign investment. Mm. because all these big businesses, they do know that corruption is something bad for business. But Malaysia is not really suffering from that. FDIs is increasing in quite a healthy way, Malaysia. So this led us to actually ask the question, are we really that corrupt? We did not go as far as saying that we are not that corrupt. We did not go to that extent. We were just asking the question. And I think the response that we got by asking the question give quite a good indication of the actual nature of the debate, which is all sides were really angry with what we said. On one side, they're saying, how dare you say we're not corrupt? Have you not read the Auditor General's report? Have you not read all these news reports and all that? Mm-hmm. And on the other side, not very happy with us because they want to push for greater, more initiative to eradicate corruption.
Right.
So by asking that question, what we found was the debate is really quite political in nature.
Indeed. So how did you arrive at that conclusion, considering you had such vibrant responses from both sides of the divide?
Mm. Let me just reiterate that we did not conclude mm-hmm. that we're not that corrupt.
Right.
We asked a question.
Right.
And the question is still out there. I think it's really for us to continue debating it. It is really important when making an accusation, I think, mm-hmm. as a research organization, we try to avoid from going into this polemical argument,
right.
Which is very anecdotal in nature. Mm-hmm. We have to go by data. And if we go by data, the question should be asked. But to be honest, I'm still struggling to balance between, to try and answer the question that we ask ourselves. Because deep inside me, I'm quite influenced by what the media says, what the politicians say,
yes.
because we read this every day. But when I read the data, it says something else. So I have not really come to a conclusion yet. This
Fair
is
enough.
A middle way.
It's trying to reconcile both sets
yeah,
of...
And it's really not an easy thing to reconcile the two,
sure.
between perception and reality.
Ravi, you mentioned before how difficult it is when fighting corruption. Some things work, some things don't work. Can you share with us some of the more successful initiatives and what didn't quite cut the mustard
sure.
when you're talking about GTP1 or even that transition to GTP2?
Sure. I mean, if you look at some of our initiatives, right, some of the easier ones, which actually took quite a bit of time to move because it was a change, was the name and shame database. It's a database of individuals who have been convicted in a Malaysian court of law for corruption. Right? It took us more than 6 months to get that moving. But today, we talk a lot about it because we have quite a number of individuals who are listed on the database. Second, we have more than 931 convicted offenders. But the interesting thing is the U.S. Embassy approached us without us prompting them, approached us and asked, can we use the database? And today, the U.S. Embassy uses that database to screen individuals who are applying for visas to the U.S., mm-hmm. right? So to me, it's a small initiative, but it's been successful. If you look at some of the larger, more ambitious initiatives, right, one that has been very, very difficult, even after 4.5 years in existence, is political financing.
Oh, it's a fun little initiative to address.
Yes. to be honest, it took us a while, but we actually had the Prime Minister come out and announce it, that he was going to enact political financing reforms.
Now, why is it so difficult to, I guess, address something like political financing? Because I guess there's a vacuum in which Malaysians or Malaysian politicians and that whole network has been operating for so long.
Correct. But it's been difficult because this is one initiative that has not won. It's just the Prime Minister who's gone out there and Barisan who has basically said, yeah, we're ready to do this. We've not had support from anyone else. So, you know, we're still waiting for opposition as well to come forward and say, let's just work on this. If we need to have a new Political Societies Act, let's just try and work on it together and enact it.
Is it because, I know we're going into sort of the political mechanics, is it because the rules and the parameters can't be agreed upon in terms of how you want to address something like political financing?
It probably is. It probably is. But as Wan Saiful says, this is really where a lot of the innuendo starts. This is really where a lot of the perceptional issues get caught up, right? We're not saying that corruption doesn't exist. It does, right? And which is exactly why we have an NKRA for anti-fighting corruption. It is something that we work very, very hard to come up with initiatives, work with the various agencies, and to at least fight it, put a barrier to it. We're saying we need to reduce it.
And what has been done to address that?
Well, a number of things, right? In addition to what we have in GTP1, where we've had enacted special courts just to hear corruption cases. Of course, we have the procurement website where we list all the various tenders that have gone out. And as of end of last year, we've had the direct negos also listed on the Ministry of Finance website. We've now, in GTP2, we've taken it forward to say, well, one of the things that's missing is ethical approaches, right? Because corruption seems to have permeated our fabric of society. Mm. Right, so we're trying to take this into the. We've done the classrooms. We've also had, you know, corporate entities pledge that they will not indulge in corruption. We're not taking it to the classrooms. So we've had 27 secretariats established across all the educational institutions to develop syllabus and propagate it to both university students as well as primary and secondary students. We also engage with the members of parliament. So we've had a number of rounds of engagements with the members of parliament where we've had the chief of MACC, the auditor general, talk to them about what is the gray space. How do you deal with the gray space, right? So we'd like to propagate this. In addition, where corruption actually starts, it starts with the giving. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to work on refinement of the MACC Act, where we're introducing the corporate liability clause, where similar to what the US and the UK practice, US has got the Foreign Corrupt Practice Act, the UK has got the UK Bribery Act, we're trying to hold corporates responsible for any corruption cases, right? Not just the individual, but the entire corporate as well. So we're trying to make it harder, right? So as I said earlier, we're just trying to build building blocks to block it.
All right. Well, you know, we've got plenty more to go through. After this, of course, we'll be speaking about the AG's report, which was just released, as well as discuss some of the other areas of GTP1, as well as GTP2. In the studios with us is Ravindram Devagunam, Director of NKRA Fighting Corruption, as well as Wan Sai for Wan Jan, Chief Executive of IDEAS, Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs. This show is brought to you by the Government Transformation Program. We'll be right back after this on BFM 89.9.
We're on when you're off. Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed.
Good evening, I'm Caroline O.
And this evening we're speaking about corruption and how we can fight it. With us is Ravindran Devagunam, Director of NKRA Fighting Corruption, as well as Wan Sai for Wan Jan, Chief Executive of the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, also known as IDEAS. Before the news, we were speaking about how you know, political financing is one of the more difficult areas when it comes to combating corruption. Wan Sai for, you know, why is it so difficult in that respect? Is it because it's been such a norm over the years or over the decades when it comes to the mechanics of it?
Well, to be honest, I think this is just a matter of political will. We have so many politicians talking about the need to be transparent, about the need to be to improve, be more accountable and all that, talking about the need to publish, to have Political Societies Act, but no one is willing to just publish their own asset first. You know, and we have this from the opposition and from the government side as well. I mean, the Prime Minister keep talking about the need to be more transparent. Why don't you just publish your own the asset first and then, you know, get everybody else to follow suit? So this is why I was saying at the beginning that there's a difference between what people say and what people do. And I think the public is seeing this more and more, that the politicians say one thing, but when it comes to their turn to actually do it, they don't. And this is becoming more a bit too obvious nowadays.
And when it comes to, areas such as that, I mean, it's political will is such an important thing when it seems to, when you talk about observing some of the other countries that have managed to combat corruption.
Yes, I agree. Political will is critical. Yes, we've had our Prime Minister stand up to it. We just need to get more traction in this area.
But things like the integrity training for MPs workshop, I mean, do these things help in that respect?
In a sense, it does. Having done surveys of political parties and their understanding of what is corruption, you know, what contributes towards corruption, I think it's important for us to keep engaging political parties as well as MPs. When they come into the legislative house, they need to understand the gray space that they are operating in or that they can be put into. And it's good to have the conversation out in the open. It's also good for them to understand how they can leverage the ministries to enforce good governance. I mean, if you talk about, you alluded to the Auditor General's report. Now, the GTP2 actually requested for the AG's report to be published 3 times a year rather than a thick book once a year.
And the intention of it was to provide more focus, I imagine?
One, to provide more focus. Two, to create more accountability. And three, to get more public scrutiny into how government spending is done. Now, having said that, before we get into the Auditor General's report, the Auditor General also publishes the Procurement Accountability Index on a yearly basis, right? And this is actually done independently by an external auditor. And over the years, we've actually scored 92%, which means 92% of the ministries actually adhere to procurement accountability measures and guidelines and governance, right? So it's really the 8% that gets highlighted by the Auditor General when he produces his process report.
So am I right in understanding that it's only the 8% that we're talking about in the media, in the news?
More or less, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's a sample. It's a sample that the Auditor General takes. Now, what we wanted to do is also educate the public on how you would read the Auditor General's report. You can compare the Auditor General's report to the Singapore Auditor General's report, mm-hmm. but our report is pretty substantive, pretty in-depth, right? And it's like a blog post. It actually says what the AG said, what the ministry said, and what the conclusion is, right? So, one, the public has to understand, or the media has to understand, how to read the report and how to decipher what's in it. Two, what we also did was, which was not done before, we then asked for the rebuttals and the responses from the ministries also to be published along with the report. So as of end of last year, those rebuttals are also published. So what you would see is by the time the report is tabled, quite a number of the issues have been addressed. So if you take, for example, the Education Ministry, they came up with a detailed action plan this time, mm-hmm. which actually listed out the issues, listed out the individuals who were responsible for addressing the issues, timelines to address the issues. So to us, it's like close enough to best practice, right? For ministries to come out and own up and say how exactly they're going to fix the gaps. Right, and if you look at the AG report, you actually have in the first series, which was for 2014, the first series that was tabled was in April. We had 55% of and by the way, we actually have an AG's dashboard, which is available online on the Auditor General's website. Right, it's a traffic light system which actually lists out every issue that has been published, and it tracks on which issue has not been addressed to, or which issue has been addressed. So basically, if you look at the April tabling, as of today we have 55% of those issues addressed. It's all in green, right? 39% is still ongoing, and 6% has not moved.
Now, one cycle, I mean, is there a disconnect then? Because if there are all these measures and initiatives in place as to, and quite publicly, I guess, on the AG's website as to what has been done, why does that perception, why is it so strong then that we haven't made the gains in the past, short or long term, whatever period we're talking
and
about?
And is it perhaps a better idea to have it broadcast? We did this show yesterday asking people what they thought, and they thought these measures, we did mention that there
yes.
is a website where
we've
all
got the dashboard
are listed out. But, you know, they said that wasn't enough in addressing the perception, and perhaps they would like it to be televised and broadcast live the same way, you know, other things are. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, firstly about why is a disconnect between the initiatives and the perception. I think if you really look at what the government has done, they're doing a lot. And, you know, entities like Ravi's NKRA Fighting Corruption is doing a lot of work to sort things out. There are some that still need to be improved, like the AG dashboard, for example. I think it needs to be a bit more user friendly. If you go there, you click, you know, you.
I was looking at it yesterday. Yeah, it takes a while to get to.
Yes, and then a commoner, you know, lay people like me, for example, will not be able to access the information that easily. So there needs to be a bit more improvement there. The procurement accountability index, for example, just release it to the public. You know, it's not. Publicly available at the moment. But having said that, there are many initiatives that has been done. But what we see in the media, however, is are things that are not yet resolved. And these are really major issues. You know, things that can be made an example of. Issues like PKFZ is coming up. You know, the NFC Corp is still unresolved. So all these
the big ticket items.
Yes, yes. And if only they are resolved properly, then I think the public perception will improve. But when we want to resolve issues like this, it's not just simply a matter of the NKRI anti-corruption or MACC doing their jobs. There's also the issue of the independence of the judiciary, the maturity of the media, the investigative ability of journalists, their freedom to investigate properly, and many more. So we're talking about institutional challenges, not just specific case-by-case issues here.
I guess it's a multi-pronged strategy that has to take place. It's not just about the big fish. It's about putting in the necessary systems in place or addressing some of the foundational issues of these institutions. We're speaking about corruption this evening. This show is brought to you by the Government Transformation Program. We'll be right back after these messages right here on BFM 89.9.
Building first world mindsets. BFM 89.9.
It's the evening edition. You're with Caroline and Ezra. In the studio with us is Ravindran Devagunam, Director of NKRA Fighting Corruption, as well as One Cypher One Jan, Chief Executive of IDEAS. Now, of course, yesterday's press briefing on the Auditor General's 2013 report, it was a first of many sorts. Dato' Paul Lau suggested that Malaysia's thicker volume indicated better accountability when comparison to our neighbours down south in Singapore. Of course, Singapore has, I think, only a 70-page audit. But of course, Federal Opposition MP Tony Pua, he goes on to say that the fact that Malaysian Auditor General's report, which is many times thicker than Singapore's report, failed to find any guilty party for the hundreds of millions of losses is not a point of self-praise, but a question mark on the performance of our transparency and related issues and the government as well.
Well, if you look at our Auditor General's report, it is voluminous. Compared to Singapore, it is very, very detailed. We take transparency to a great depth, and I think for the right reasons. And the government, over the last one year, with every successive tabling of the Auditor General's report, investigations are carried out within the civil service, right? And we must understand, and this is where I think public misconstrues the AG's report to corruption. Whereas most of what you find in the AG's report are procedural and process issues. Second, there are administrative oversight. And third, there are some possibilities of corruption.
And we were speaking about that distinction yesterday evening about, financial mismanagement or just administrative processes versus outright, good old corruption.
I think it's a little bit hard to swallow because we're looking at such big numbers.
Yeah.
When you look at figures in the millions, you're thinking administrative processes. I mean, did somebody steal pens or something?
Yeah. What kind of problem is that? I think that's a disconnect, right?
Yeah, there is a disconnect. And that is something that we've been working with the civil service, with MACC, with the AG's office, with the Attorney General's office as well. And they do have committees now that are overseeing actions to be taken. So yesterday when we had the town hall session with the media, the KSN actually, the Chief Secretary, actually read out the punitive actions that are being taken against individuals, civil servants, the number of cases that are still under investigation, and also the number of cases that have been referred to the MACC, right? And in this tabling, in the latest tabling, he did say that there was no cause for concern on corruption-related issues, mostly process-related issues. Now, we'll wait for the actual committee responses to come out to see how many cases have been referred to MACC.
Right. So, also for the first time, we're saying there's the Public Accounts Committee. We'll be calling up the five ministries. Can you tell us exactly, what to expect, what the public should look out for?
I think the public needs to be aware of what's in the report. The one issue we do have in this country, and I think One Cypher also kind of alluded to it, everything gets politicized and everything gets sensationalized. It's not everything that has to be sensationalized, So everyone looks for that sensation. And the public needs to understand more what's in the report, how it's been presented, right? And what are the core issues? So they can ask questions on what are the core issues, right? If there are procedural issues that have to be changed, then, we need to push the civil service to address those issues and fix it. And if there are punitive actions, let's go after them.
Well, one cycle, I mean, when you talk about having elected representatives look into some of these areas where the five ministries are involved, and I'm sure when the next report comes out, more ministries will be under the microscope. This is a welcome move. I mean, a lot of the people from the public, at least from the folks we were speaking to yesterday, they were quite excited about it because they don't know exactly what to expect. They've never seen accountability. They've never seen heads roll in that traditional sense.
Yeah, but I think what we're seeing today is actually something relatively new. If you look at the way the media reacted yesterday at the public briefing that Ravi just mentioned, I think you will see that even the media was not expecting that level of engagement happening. It's something new, and it's really good. I think we're moving in the right direction. My hope is, as we move forward, that the platforms for engagement can be formalized rather than doing it on ad hoc basis. You know, we keep talking about the need for the public to be aware, the need for the public to question more. I think what we need to do is create a platform where those questions and those awareness can be done properly and continuously. There is something that we are exploring in ideas this year. There's an international framework called the Open Government Partnership, where the government, civil society, and the business community actually form a formal, the tri-party committee, if you like, to continuously engage on important issues. I think something like that really should be considered, so that we don't have to, you know, start thinking on who should we invite next when we do this kind of briefing by Pemandu. You know, there should be a formal platform where civil society can be continuously involved.
I guess, you know, when you talk about formalizing those platforms and those checks and balances, it's very much a part and parcel. I mean, it sounds boring, but it's almost necessary to ensure, that you can actually limit the type of corruption that takes place.
Yes. I mean, it does sound boring. Yeah. Right? You can imagine my life.
Oh, Ravi.
But it is not. It is not. Really, because on a constant basis, on a daily basis, you are constantly thinking about the boundaries that you can set up and how you can bring the boundaries closer and closer, right? So when you look at it, from afar, it does seem like, what are you doing? You know, the boundaries doesn't seem to be moving, but it is actually moving, right? But as One Saiful says, I think there's a level of understanding and maturity that has to come into civil society, where they're beginning to delve deeper into issues and not just adhere to the spin or the sensationalism that happens out there.
Well, from your opinion, considering what happened yesterday at the press briefing and so on, and how it manifested in the press today, in the media today, what do you think of the media's approach?
Well, I agree with One Saiful.
Is it early days?
It's early days. It was a bit too early, and I don't think the media was prepared to see what was going to happen yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, it was government coming forward. You know, civil service, not just the politicians, but the civil service coming forward to say, "Hey, we're ready to engage you. Right? Here's the transparency. Here's how far we can come forward. Right? So." It would have been nice to have the media a lot more prepared, right, and go through individual issues in the report and ask, you know, page and verse and say, was cited and say, can you answer this?
Now, once over, this is going to be an interesting opportunity for the media, when you're talking about print, broadcast, radio. I mean, now that, you know, the thing that we've been asking for, transparency and accountability, is served on our table, I mean, this is a real opportunity, isn't it?
It is. It is a huge opportunity, not just for the media, for civil society as well. We've been demanding this for so long. Suddenly, when it's there, you know,
you're not sure what to do.
You're not sure what to do.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes. But I really think this shows that it is really important for the media and civil society to really improve our capabilities. You know, capacity building is really important. It's not enough to just flick through the newspapers and say, aha, I know this issue now. It's not enough. If I can just have just a bit more time, we ran a 9-month project looking at transparency in government procurement last year. We concluded that in March. Now, we identified some series of issues that need to be addressed. And we put it forward to the government. What we found was it is not as easy as just simply issuing a press statement.
Right.
You know, there are different layers of government that we need to talk to. There are people that we need to persuade. It is not as easy as saying Najib should do this. There are things that really need to be done in the proper way. There is a hierarchy. It's bureaucratic. That's why the government is bureaucratic. It's sad. I wish it's not like that. Mm-hmm. But that is a reality, and we need to appreciate that.
Folks, we've been speaking about how we can fight corruption. Joining us this past hour has been Ravindram Devagunam, Director of NKRA Fighting Corruption, as well as Wan Saifulwan Jan, Chief Executive of the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs Ideas. Folks, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
If you missed any part of that program, you can download the podcast at www.bfm.my. We've got some music for you. New Soul by Yael Naeem, right here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.